This is Alex Hightower
and Lainey Mays.
And this is Do You Even Podcast, a podcast about everything you didn't know you wanted to know about podcasts. Do You Even Podcast?
Do You Even Podcast? Hi guys!
Hey! We are really excited today because we have a few special guests.
Oh, we love interviews and we love podcasters coming on the show, and we are so lucky that today we have several podcasters coming on the show. Yes. Alex, who's here?
We have the creators and the lovely people who put together Lindsay, a radio play. So it's this fantastic noir podcast, fiction, which is one of my favorites. And I'm so happy to welcome Alexandra Waxberg, Hannah Worker, Isabel Platt. So guys, hello, welcome, thank you.
Hi.
How are you guys doing?
Good. We're so happy to be talking to you guys.
Yes.
Oh, we are too. And it's so funny because we're all in New York, but we're recording remotely on the computer. So we're like a big city divided by, you know, a river right now.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
So thanks for hopping on the phone with us. And Alex, do you want to tell a little bit about the show and then we'll get into some questions?
Yes, definitely. So I'm going to read the description of the show so everyone who maybe hasn't listened to it, you know, has a good sneak peek. The year is 1997. Marzipan has just landed a job as a security guard on the set of a movie starring twin teens, Lindsay and Sydney Lohan. When sinister things keep happening on set, Marzipan decides to investigate. But she soon realizes that getting more involved with the Lohans only spells double trouble. Lindsay, a six-part audio noir, is the never-before-heard story of the making of The Parent Trap. It's the story of how two twins became one. So I love it. I love the drama. I think what's really great is it's six parts, so it's super digestible. All the episodes, all six episodes, range from 15 to 30 minutes long. So I think that maybe if you're new to the fiction world, this is a really great starting point. You'll whip right through it. And the podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, on Spotify. Just to let you guys know before we dig in, you can check them out at lindsaypodcast.com. And you can also find them on Instagram and Twitter at lindsaypodcast. I want to clarify, it's Lindsay, L-I-N-D-S-A-Y. And you can also find them on Facebook too at facebook.com/lindsaypodcast. So I'm really excited to dive in. As I mentioned, we have three lovely guests with us today. We have Alex, who is the writer, director, and producer. Alex is a writer and director based in New York. Most recently, he worked as the production manager for Third Avenue Playhouse in Door County, Wisconsin. While there, he programmed and taught a film noir class and directed two plays with middle and high schoolers, one of which he wrote. He served as a producer on the award-winning short film When Perry Met Allie and recently finished a feature-length film that he wrote. And we also have Hannah here with us as well. So she's the director, producer, and editor of Lindsay. She's a New York City-based documentary filmmaker. She was an associate producer and additional editor on Eating Animals. Most recently, Hannah's editorial work has included This Is Personal, The Case Against Adnan Syed, and Dogs. And her short film, When Perry Met Allie, has played a National Film Festival for Talented Youth, Laugh Riot Girl Festival, and On Short of the Week. And we also have Isabel Platt, who's the producer and editor. Isabel is a writer and director who's currently pursuing her MFA in screenwriting at the Barry R. Feuerstein Graduate School of Cinema in Brooklyn. She has seen a lot of award-winning TV shows, most notably Fleabag,
fans, my gosh.
And Fargo, and recently had the pleasure of attending the Pulitzer Prize-nominated play, What the Constitution Means to Me. She enjoys eating breakfast and working on long projects with her friends. That is a great bio.
It's probably my favorite bio I've ever read. Also, side note, I was Fleabag for Halloween, so.
Yes. Oh, that's so good.
So, and kindred spirit right here.
I was the guinea pig. I think that's very
We'll have to put on our blog a picture because it's really wonderful.
Yes.
And you can pick up a book with the rest of your accolades because you guys have done so much.
I know.
And although not here physically, your other producer, Rachel Aronoff, couldn't make it, but want to shout out to them as well.
Yeah. She has a ton of wonderful accolades as well. Produced content for the Smithsonian Side Door, Masterpiece on PBS, Masterpiece Studio. She really knows her stuff. And I know that you guys really pulled her in to link you guys with the podcast world. So we want to give her a shout out. I'm sure she'll come up in our questions.
Okay. So this is probably one of my favorite things we're going to ask you.
Oh,
today.
My goodness.
So,
wait, can I just say, when yes. Lainey and I were coming up with questions, you know, I pulled a few, but Lainey came up with this first question, and I was just like, we need to start with this, because I think this really captures the excitement around this type of podcast, the nostalgia. So take it away, Lainey.
Okay. So everyone, especially us 90s kids, yeah. are morbidly obsessed with an actor's trajectory from child star to off the deep end. Britney circa 7, anyone? Why do you think we're so interested in seeing their fall from grace? Do you think this audio drama holds on to time when we saw this wholesome Lindsay we idolized, or do you see it as more of an explanation for her downfall?
As well.
The first part was, what's our obsession with child stars?
Yes.
I think, like, there's a, like, we like seeing child stars, like, have a downfall and, like, have a breakdown, because it makes them seem a lot more human. And I think it makes, like, at least me feel less alone in like, my breakdowns that I went through growing up. And, like, I think it's just, like, reveling in the fact that these people who are presented to us as, like, gods are just humans.
Yeah.
And like no one really thinks, like no one thinks about child stars who like made it smoothly to adulthood, because like that's just boring. Like in a boring life in general. Like, because it's not true. So it's like we're always searching, like we're always looking for like the truth in other humans. And like looking for like an experience that we've had ourselves.
Right.
No, I agree with that. I think that's true. I'm thinking about, you know, the child stars who first come to mind. And yeah, it's always the ones with a rougher go.
Yeah. Or like if they have more of a successful life, you're like, I forgot about them.
Yeah. I don't know, like Justin Bieber right now. Like I like him a lot more because it seems like he's going through like a bit of a rough time mentally. Cause it's like, yeah, like no way you could be like this super successful child singer and like just continue that, you know, without like being depressed or whatever. And like, okay, he's got some depth.
I think it was, this whole show was a real love letter to Lindsay Lohan. Mm-hmm. In my I don't know if you guys felt that way, but yeah. You know, I think that I don't know. It's just so hard to like live a normal, adjusted life as a child star. So I think a big part of this, you know, the plot of the show is so absurd and out there. But just getting to the idea of how messed up everybody around Lindsay was, and how that made it completely impossible for her to succeed. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, like even seeing a movie this year like Honey Boy. Like, you know, child stars just have so much trauma, and like, you know, it's like Shia LaBeouf had to like make a movie to try to sort through that trauma, right. You know, and that's like how he survived. And I think Lindsay didn't have that opportunity, or, you know, for whatever reason, couldn't quite do that. But I think also what gets lost in the shuffle is like, she was just a super talented child who just got like messed around by all these adults around her.
Yeah.
No, definitely. Definitely. So I think, you know, building off of that, like you were saying, this format that you chose, choosing noir as this type of storytelling, why was that your choice? I think there are ways, as you acknowledge, that it plays with absurdism, but also some very real issues. So why did you choose noir to tell this story?
Well, I really like noir in general as a genre. As you read in my bio, I taught noir class, and I think Bored to Death was like a huge inspiration for me for this show. This kind of stoner noir, I really like that angle. And then also, you know, Marzipan was kind of a surrogate for me in some ways. So, you know, the idea of just like the malaise of leaving college and, you know, most noirs are a lot of like the Bogart noirs are kind of set after the war, you know, everything's darker, people's innocence is gone. And so there, I saw this kind of parallel with leaving college. Obviously, it's not the same thing as going to war, but just this idea of going back into the world and not really having a sense of what, you know, you just came out of this very contained world that kind of has no bearing on the world you're in now. So I was kind of interested in that.
That's really interesting. Yeah. I think that's such a, that really pulls in, you know, this generation who already is obsessed with Lindsay Lohan and that kind of era, but also, yes, looking at these kids who have recently come out of college, out of that education and really trying to build their way in this world that is very difficult to find a job, to make a living, to really support yourself.
I've never really thought about it until just now, but like really with like Lindsay Lohan in general, like seeing her going through these transitions in her life through this play as a child actor is kind of reflecting of that as well. Like we are trying to go back and go through transitions too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, we were really interested in the, for Marzipan, the transition out of college. Mm-hmm. And I think too, that's why the noir was so great. It's like such a self-serious genre.
Mm-hmm.
And coming out of college, there's like this need to like grow up and take things seriously. And her, the way that she navigates that world is pretending to be self-serious and pretending that she's got this bigger mission. I think that was something that was interesting to me, was like, after college, wanting to be a part of something so bad that you'll just be a part of
anything,
like something that is really bad, something that you actually like don't believe in and eventually like ends up hurting you. But it's just that need to like be, have a purpose and, and be a part of something.
Right.
Yeah. Also noir is, I think of noir movies as like, there's either the private dick one, which is like Bogey, or there's the kind of third man one where it's someone kind of stumbles into the role of the detective. So I also, it just worked really well for the story we were telling that, you know, she starts off as security and kind of stumbles into this role as detective on the set of The Parent Trap. And I think story-wise, it worked. It also just ended up working out really well for what we were trying to do.
Yeah.
It's a perfect fit.
Yeah,
really. Makes sense.
So for the listeners, can you briefly describe how you all came to work together on this show?
Yeah, so we all went to college together. We went to the Claremont Consortium. So Isabel and I and Rachel were at Pitzer College, and Alex was at Pomona. And we had been friends and had done kind of small creative things together. But then Alex, this is what, like a year out of college, Alex had called me up and said he was working on this thing. And I just like instantly fell in love with it. And so we kind of branched off from there. Then we brought Isabel in. And then Rachel came when we kind of realized we really needed somebody who understood podcasts and all of that.
Yeah, and I'm, like, a super fan of The Parent Trap. Like, I saw it in six times in theaters when it came out.
I love that.
Yeah, no, I had my VHS. Get it.
Yeah, and so, like, it was so cool that Alex had written something about it. And, yeah, I think that also, like, it was so nice to have someone, like, come to you with a creative project to do after, like, because I think, like, because I was a year out of college and I was working at a job that was not creative at all that I thought would have been creative. So I was like so happy to jump on this and work with them.
To have that opportunity to flex those muscles.
Yeah, I think also in college it was so much easier to work together because, you know, we were just around each other all the time and college was sometimes not as demanding and we could do our own projects. And so it was also just, I mean, it was just so nice, you know, these just to get to work together and get to see each other so much was a big part of it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And how did, Alex, I know that you, you came with this idea, but in terms of shaping the story together, how did that process work in terms of collaborating between all of you guys? How did you bounce off feedback?
Yeah, so I think, so I started writing, I think I had a basic story arc in mind. Mm-hmm. I think I had written, an episode or two when I came to you? Yeah. So I had written an episode or so with Hannah. Once I came to Hannah with it, Hannah talked me through it. And so I think I wrote a couple more episodes with Hannah's feedback. And I think around like episode four is when we brought Isabel in and trying. And so Isabel helped to kind of shape what the end of the story would look like. And then also revising those first four episodes. And so then all together, we kind of were able to put together the six episode arc. And I'm like a sucker for six episode arcs because you know, in the UK, those are the Fleabag and, you know, all the best, The Office, UK, all the best shows have six episodes.
I mean, if it's good enough for Fleabag, it's good enough for us.
So then we had six episodes and then we like moved towards production at that point, right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And it was after we had recorded everything that we brought Rachel into the fold, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Oh, and then, yeah, speaking of, you know, getting to that point of production, the cast is incredible. There are so many voices, and I just love how each character feels fully formed and thought out. The casting for each person from Dave to Lindsay and Sydney, I think that, you know, that was done really well. But how did you wrangle a cast like that for this?
It was kind of a big, like, smorgasbord of people we knew, but also people we found. I mean, Alex, you did most of the casting, so you may be able to speak better to it.
Yeah, so first we did a reading at Isabel's place. So we heard it out loud, and we recorded it also so Hannah could listen in, and because she wasn't there, so she could get a sense. So I think that was really helpful just in terms of what we needed from those actors. I remember that the person who read for Marzipan was pretty slow, and it became pretty clear that needed to be a much faster dialogue. I mean, the whole thing is quick, but Marzipan specifically. So then it was like a lot of like friends in New York, actor friends, some people that we were able to, like, we did like a posting and get a couple people that way. Marzipan is Annie Fox, who's like this incredible, incredible actor.
Her voice is like great for that character. It just works so well.
Yeah.
She was, so I had her in mind from the beginning. She grew up around my cousins, so I've like known her for a while, and she was at NYU. And then Eileen Vecti also has this kind of, I had a friend who was like, oh, I have somebody who has kind of a youngish voice.
Yeah.
So she was great. I think once we had them, it was easier to build around that because they're so good and they're really the heart of the show. But we didn't pay anybody. It was just over the course of the weekend. We rented out a recording studio and we brought food in, and I think it was like two, like 7 or 8 hour days.
Yeah. It was amazing because we recorded everything. And then at the end, like the last 2 hours were dedicated to Annie, who plays Marzipan, just doing her like voiceover, the narration. And she like killed it because we were just like, we have 30 minutes left and we've got two episodes to do. Go fast.
And the audio engineer was like, oh yeah, by the way, I have like somebody coming in 20 minutes. And
so it was very intense, but like we totally lucked out with all of our people. And I think with Eileen particularly, because she had the trouble of doing two voices.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was at the beginning, we were like, well, do we get two different actors or do we just have one? And so we got super, super lucky with her and her ability to like actually shape two different characters is kind of like amazing.
Yeah, that's a big challenge to do in two days. I can't even imagine. Like, did you ever, like, so you finished and you didn't have to go back and do anything?
Like,
yeah, we did.
I was going to say.
Yeah, no, we had to go back. There was like some characters we had to switch out.
There was gauze, right?
Yeah.
We had to do
We had to do like a new voice actor for one of them because it just wasn't working. And then we had to find somebody to do the big openings.
The voice. Yeah.
So that was separate. So there was a lot of pickups afterwards.
But that's still very impressive, that haul. And also the fact that you paid them in food. I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Well, we're lucky that they accepted that.
Right after college, everybody's like, thanks for the food.
Yeah, exactly.
So how did you guys connect with Rachel? I know we touched on her earlier, but can you speak a little bit more about what she brought to the project?
Yeah, totally. So she came on as we finished production and we were starting to think about all the different tasks we would have, how we're going to get it out, how we're going to market. And we knew her from Pitzer, and I knew that she was doing podcasts professionally. So I reached out to her just to kind of pick her brain, ended up sending her the script, and she loved it and wanted to get involved. So she came in, and she like was our great big guide. I mean, we didn't know what we were doing after production. And so she really guided us through as like the little things of like how you even put a podcast on Apple. Mm-hmm. And then the bigger things of networking and getting the show out to people who would listen to it. So she vastly shaped how it all went down.
She was also like a like breath of like confidence and reassurance for us too, because it was like Justin existed in our world for so long, and then to have her come on and be like, no, this is good, like I believe in it, like I want to work with you guys, was like really nice.
Yeah, I feel like that is refreshing. You guys are putting your blood, sweat, and tears into it, but before you, you know, share it with the world, getting that other opinion. I know that, you know, also connecting and networking is something that we also are always looking at and trying to figure out. So it's great to bring someone into the fold who has that experience. Definitely.
Yeah. I also have to say she has the most tuned ear that I've experienced. She would like the smallest little pee pop or the smallest little breath, she would find it.
Yeah.
And I'd have to listen back when we were editing like 5 times. And I'm like, oh, I hear it.
Yeah.
She's like, great ear for all the sound editing.
I edited one episode and she would give us notes back. And like, she would always hear, she could hear things I could not hear. And I would just like, fucking Rachel. Fucking Rachel trying to make this the best it can be. So annoying.
That's great. I'm gonna hire her.
I know.
Yeah. Everyone should hire her.
So have you three worked on other podcast projects before? This is your first one?
First one. Alex, you've done podcasts before, right? Or a podcast.
Yeah, I did like I did like an audio episode thing. My friend had like a radio show in LA, and so I put together like a little storytelling episode, but that's the extent of my experience.
I had never done any type of podcast before this.
Okay. So compared to your other work, what were the unique challenges of working like solely as a podcast medium, particularly for a fiction or scripted show?
I think I actually felt like it was a bit less challenging than working on other projects, just because like I come from working in film and like the absence of picture and like of other aspects made it seem a lot easier. Like there were a lot more I don't know, there were just a lot fewer things to deal with that like actually helped with the creativity.
Yeah I think actually this project a little bit was born out of my frustration with a film project that I did and wanting to just focus on like one thing and
sound.
Yeah. and knowing that that would be an easier thing to wrangle. Yeah, I mean, but in terms of like difficulties in making audio, I think the biggest thing is figuring out how to show without telling as much as possible. And obviously we did a lot of telling because we had a VO, but you know, you're trying to set a scene and you're trying to create a world, and you don't want to, you know, you don't want to guide the listener too much where you're telling them exactly what's happening and what's, you want the story to do some of that. So I feel like that's a little difficult without picture.
But I feel like Alex came from also writing plays, and I feel like that must have helped you a lot too.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, that's true.
I think we were all really interested, and this is part of the reason why we chose to do a podcast, and also why we're not really, like, I don't think we would consider ourselves podcasters, is like, we're interested.
Speak for yourself.
Well, but it's like, we loved the story, and it was going to be whatever medium or form was going to make the story more interesting or more playful. And it felt like for this, the audio form was the best way to tell this story, because we're telling a story that takes place in the 90s. It's based off of real people. And so there's a lot of, you know, if we were going to film this, there's just already so many issues you would run into. And so by doing it in the audio form, it feels far more freeing. And I felt that way because I come from a documentary editing background, and it's about a different way of world building. And so we're doing, it's like you can be more creative the more limitations you have. So in that way, it was really fun. Okay. I'd say the biggest challenge was, for me, this was the biggest, like, project that I've ever worked on in terms of managing one or like running one. You know, we had a really big cast. There was a lot of logistics. It was a lot of content. So it was a great learning experience and definitely challenging with very little resources to like wrangle everybody.
Yeah. And Hannah did like everything in terms of organizing this project. We would, yeah, I don't know, in terms of Excel spreadsheets and Google Docs and everything, Hannah was the only reason that this got completed.
Yeah, I'm a lover of the Google Docs.
Yeah, the Google Doc is so great for collaboration. Like, I don't know who invented that, but they are my favorite person.
Mr. Google.
Mr. Google. Mr. Google. So... I think that, like you were saying, you can use this medium to do a lot of unique world building. I think that in addition to the really strong world building, in addition to the humor and the absurdism, you also touch on a lot of darker and also more serious issues. I think, you know, the whole thing about watching, you know, a child star's downfall is fascinating, but also difficult to reckon with sometimes. And so I think that you're looking at all of the dangers that child stars are exposed to here. When you guys were working on that script and like delving into like sexualization of child stars, murder in this world, what were your thoughts when writing the episodes, particularly with some of these more serious issues? Did you have any concerns, hopes? Like, what were you hoping listeners would take away from the story?
So I guess the most like problematic scene is in episode 3 when Marzipan and Sydney kiss. I definitely wanted to like go there because there is such a strong sexualization of child stars, but just as like advice to all male creators, that's like, it's a good reason to have female collaborators, because I definitely did not write it in good taste originally, and Hannah and Isabel were able to kind of make that scene much more palatable, where, you know, we went there, but kind of without being explicit about it and without kind of being gross about it. Mm-hmm, yeah. But just, you know, the hint of it is enough for us to all be kind of disgusted by what's happening, but it doesn't need to be anything more than that. So I think there was a lot of stuff like that where Hannah and Isabel were just really great about kind of reeling me in, where, you know, some of the darker stuff wasn't like, didn't completely turn people off.
I have to say that one, that scene was probably the only one that I was like, oh, Oh my goodness. But in a way, I think thinking back after it, like I let it sit for a second, and it really, if it was the opposite in like a noir film, an older man and a younger woman, like that would have happened. And so, you know, also I think you're supposed to feel kind of uncomfortable. Like these young girls are being sexualized in this, you know, when they're child stars or whatever. And so I think like thinking, reflecting back on it, I really saw why you did it that way. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have a problem with
it. I think, yeah, it makes you think, you know, and it, sometimes it is uncomfortable to go there initially, but it did feel like a choice, like a very specific choice. I agree.
Yeah. I think too, I mean, we talked so extensively about that scene and what that scene was supposed to mean. And I think for me, the idea was not about literally what was happening in that room. It was this bigger idea about infatuation with young people. And like you said, like that's very specific to noir. It's like older men with younger women. And in everything, it's there's always this underlying sexualization of young people. And I think it's a moment that we're using because we want you to question Marzipan. Mm-hmm. I think throughout the series, she becomes the surrogate for the audience. And then the moment when we make you question her, we want you to be questioning yourself, because it's not just the creepy trolls online who are saying weird things. I mean, it's like everybody's implicated in terms of sexualizing young people. I was telling Isabel and I were just talking about this, and I remember, or I think somebody told me, when Natalie Portman, before she turned 18, there was a countdown clock.
Oh my God.
Of when she turned 18.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's the greatest thing I've ever heard.
And it's just all of these, like, people forget that child stars are people, and they become these symbols that we just get to use and abuse. So we definitely wanted to point that out and make people uncomfortable.
I think also a big part of what we were doing was playing with the tropes of noir. So, you know, having the private dick be Marzipan, having it be a woman, what does that do to the story? Mm-hmm. And then also having the femme fatale be a child, you know, what does that do to the story? So, you know, the femme fatale is always, right, always going to be like always going to enchant or put the detective under their spell. So what does that look like if, you know, Sydney is doing that to Marzipan?
Right. I think that the episode after that third one, I thought the intro was really interesting. If I'm remembering that correctly, the voice mentions Judy Garland. It mentions, you know, these past stars and the things that they had to do to kind of continue to keep the fantasy. And so I think you guys did a good job of, one, showing, you know, this issue and how you question Marzipan, but also showing the effect it has on the children too, in a very like upsetting way, like the trauma that they're slowly experiencing. I think that the whole thing where Marzipan kisses one and then the other one is like, has these feelings as well. You know, you're reckoning with how this affected Lindsay too. I think that's really complex. I think that's really, you know, difficult subject matter, but I thought it was interesting that you went there where how would the child grow up if they're witnessing that and really going to their brain as well?
Right, right.
Yeah, I agree. Good point. So I think we've kind of hit on most of the questions we wanted to ask, but before we sign off, this is granted, I like the duplicity in this question, and mainly maybe I'm going to make you go a little darker into yourselves, but who do you relate to most, Lindsay or Sydney, and why?
Oh God. I relate to Sydney because I relate to Lindsay, sorry.
Oh, I like this.
It comes out. Oh, you heard it here first.
Isabel can't tell the characters apart. It's funny. We're just going to give Isabel a sense of the plot for a second.
All right, regroup and come back.
I was trying to take one for the team and answer first.
I appreciate it.
I actually feel more strongly about saying that I don't relate to Sydney, because Sydney, like, very much knows what she wants and, like, is willing to
do whatever.
Yeah.
Isabel doesn't have the killer instinct.
I do not have a killer instinct.
I know. I love to do this where we have more like two characters that are like together or maybe against each other a lot in fiction. But we work in publishing. So like, even when I interview authors, I'm like, which of these two characters that you totally made up would you want? Cause I feel like the darker side comes out in one of them, like what they're really thinking deep down. So I love this question because usually it's such a thumper. Like, it's totally fine if you can't pick, because that means you wrote two characters that you equally respect or love, that you know, you wrote their story and it's truthful to you. So it's totally fine.
I can pick.
Alex has an answer.
I relate more to Lindsay because I'm the kind of person who would act like I don't care about being famous and successful, but secretly, I want it just as bad as Sydney.
That's
good.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay, that's good.
That's good.
Good.
Everybody's like, yup, we're going with that one.
The support in the room.
Yeah.
This really is a collaborative effort, and yes. I love it.
Yes, yeah. Indeed.
Yeah, I just want to say also that it was a really long process to make it, and I feel like, it's hard to stay motivated. The biggest thing was the fact that we were all working together. And I think that made it so much easier to keep going and to keep our momentum because we liked each other so much. I would say like, don't make something with, people you don't like, because it's hard to keep that momentum. And also I think we sat on it for like a year or something. So also just like, if it just because you have time off of a project, that doesn't mean that the project is lost forever, and you can always pick things back up. And we did that. And now I'm super proud of what we made.
That's some really good advice. I think that's great. I'm gonna quote that in a tweet. I think that's wonderful. A really good point.
We're some millennials. We're going to quote that in a tweet.
I am. I think it's true though. It does make a difference, you know. Like, I think for any creative project, but for podcasts, we've seen that it can get, you know, it gets progressively harder in figuring out what you're going to talk about and keeping to a schedule. But when you're working with people that, you know, you feel good about and that really help you kind of grow, you can stick with it.
Yeah, we always have our saying is, if we're not loving it and having fun, then what's the point? We're not going to do it.
Yeah.
So you have to check in with yourselves. Okay, well, is there anything else you guys want to talk about before we wrap it up?
We had a great editor, Rowena Tessima. She's really, really incredible. She worked on our episodes 4 and 5, I believe.
Yeah.
And she was super talented and a huge part of this project as well.
Yeah, she's awesome. We go to school together. And our composer was amazing too, Tree Palmetto. Mm-hmm. Very talented musician. And I actually went to like kindergarten through high school with him.
Oh,
and just like hadn't really talked to him afterwards, and sent him an email, asked him if he wanted to do it, and he was like such an amazing person to work with.
Hugely talented. We so lucked out with him doing our music.
I think that's all the questions we have for you guys. We really appreciate it. I think, you know, we talked about a lot of interesting things, from noir storytelling to child stars to deeper themes. So I really appreciate you guys sharing a little bit more about this project and what made it so special for y'all.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was such a pleasure. Yeah. And your questions were great.
Like I said at the top of the show, you can find them on Instagram and Twitter at Lindsay, LINDSAY podcast. And they also have a website, lindsaypodcast.com.
Yeah, and we'll put all this info on our blog. So
the website's super cool too, designed by Catherine Maldonado, and it has people appearing and disappearing. So you should check that out. Sorry to interrupt your outro.
No,
this is
please,
great.
That's wonderful.
It takes a village.
Yeah, and that's also an interesting point, because you have like, besides making this big project, you've spent all this time, this weekend recording, and then really you have to get it out there. And so a website really is one of the things that you have to think about. And so I'm glad you pointed that out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for us. Go check everything out. All this information's on our blog, and you can find links to Lindsay.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.